Fly ball right center on the run is Stanton. Oh, what a play! What a play by Stanton! He took an extra base hit away and gets saluted by Abreu. Put a star next to that one. Stanton just robbed Santander.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 85 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter, at BreakBallsPod. Or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377.
You know, the World Series was rough for me, as we all know. But the time since has really flown by, and that's not the only thing that flew by this week, Emily.
I mean, I couldn't have asked for a more perfect segue than that. And
segue from nothing. The show just started.
I know. Well, everyone that's listening, I literally did the intro and then I was like, what do I say? Now that the season's over, I just have no idea what to say on this podcast.
Co-host to the rescue. What are you going to do?
What John is referring to is the Atlanta Braves. They, of course, had their parade and their day of celebration in the city of Atlanta and by their ballpark, which is in like the suburbs of Atlanta. So they started the parade in downtown Atlanta. And then there was a 12-mile break where there wasn't like the parade route. They were just traveling to Truist. But on their way there, and now I can only assume it was because they were like about to get onto the fucking parkway or something. The clips that we saw from downtown Atlanta, this bus was traveling at like 40 miles an hour.
Okay, can I just say, I hate that context, because prior to you saying that, I was not aware of that context, and I thought it was just the Braves speeding by on, like, the pre-assigned parade route. Like, that's how they did the whole thing.
One of my favorite clips was definitely from someone, you know, in the crowd that had probably been waiting in this section of the parade route for
right.
hours.
That's what's so funny to me, is, like, these people have been waiting just for this glimpse, for them to slowly roll by, see all the players, and then just this red blur, just, yeah.
That's really what it was. So this person's filming, and you see the bus come into frame, and it's like it looked like the wave, like when in a stadium when you see people do the wave, like you saw the people as the bus passed them, like, yay, do like a cheer, but they couldn't even get their arms up fast enough. The bus was already halfway blocked down.
Brief aside, am I crazy here? I don't understand all the hate for the wave. I know that's way off topic, but like, it's stupid, it's outdated, but it like, it actively infuriates some people. And I just don't understand that level, whether positive or negative, that level of reaction to something as innocuous as the wave.
Especially when you consider how much fucking downtime there is in a baseball
yeah.
game. Like, is it the worst thing in the world for people to be like, fuck, I'm bored. Hey, you want to just like stand up and see if we can get this thing going?
Like, right. Like, is it just like pure torture for some people? Like they see it coming halfway across the stadium like, oh no, it's going to be the longest 15 seconds of my life.
I've seen people criticize it because it's happening, like, I guess, in important moments where in a playoff game, I can understand if it's
okay.
like late innings, it's kind of weird for the home crowd to be doing the fucking wave when there's like stuff happening. But if it's a blowout or whatever, that's acceptable to people. So there's like arbitrary lines drawn here, which I guess is the name of the game in this
sport.
That's it. What's not arbitrary, however, is the qualifying offer. There were 14 offered this year, which is the most, I think, ever.
Was that the
most,
really?
No, actually, let me correct myself. It's the most the most ever. I meant the most since 2016, where they had 20 qualifying offers.
I have a short attention span, so that might as well be the most ever.
And there's already been four players to decline. Chris Taylor, Nick Castellanos, Corey Seager, and the Mets' former own, Michael Conforto.
Former own. That's funny. Yeah, you know what? I mean, I personally, don't want to say I called it, but I totally called it. No, I had kind of suspected that Conforto would say no, mainly because he's a Boris guy. Scott Boras is not going to let his client take a qualifying offer if he thinks he can get him a deal, which he clearly does. Delusional or not, time will tell. We'll see. And the other one, Syndergaard, we haven't gotten an answer yet, but rumors are, and the trajectory the entire time has looked like, he's going to say yes. Even some of his social media activity since he received the qualifying offer has been kind of tongue-in-cheek. Like, there was some, like, you know, like I love New York graffiti that he posted, and he clapped back at somebody that Heyman, that's right, Heyman made some bullshit like, you think the Mets are offering Syndergaard too much? Oh, you mean with the qualifying offer, like the preset amount that every team who's offering a qualifying offer has to pay? I think it's a smart move, but yeah, so all signs point to Syndergaard saying yes, which is good because we're definitely gonna lose Stroman. We need arms, so I'm all about it. I hope he does say yes. That was the criticism too. It's like 2 innings pitched over 2 years. It's like, yeah, major reconstructive surgery. Like he's working on it. Okay.
And Syndergaard would be a fucking idiot to not accept that.
Seriously.
Because of the fact that he hasn't played basically in 2 years. So even if he were to go out in the free agent market, there would be interest there, but how much more could he possibly get than he's certainly not going to get $18 million a year. And if he gets a multi-year deal, it would be for way less than $18 million average annual value. So it's in his best interest to just fucking stay where he is.
Right, right. And I mean, if there was any doubt that it's officially over between Conforto and the Mets, Alderson laid any hesitation to rest in he had a press conference.
Yeah, apparently Scott Boras, which he had some nice things to say about his client, Michael Conforto, basically calling him an NL East or beast of the NL East or something like that.
He's the king of Queens. Like, come on.
All these like as if he was like a boxing promoter, like at the weigh-in. That's what Boras sounded like.
It's like Don King.
From the clip that we watched right before we started recording, to be fair, we didn't see anything that happened before it. The clip started right from Sandy seemingly asking a reporter about it.
He did have some remarks about the Conforto situation, didn't he?
Yeah.
As well? Yeah. And they were...
He's an NL East beast.
King of Queens.
King of Queens.
And the ace of many GM's hearts.
Yeah. Okay.
He attributed his performance to COVID in the earlier part of
the I season. See. Yeah. Well, those comments I would characterize as a blowhard in a house of cards.
That is a blowhard in a house of cards. What does that even mean?
Well, I mean, calling Scott Boras a blowhard, I'm very much here for. I am not a Sandy apologist, but that I like. And, you know, I mean, like, okay, here's the thing with Conforto. Again, I keep coming back to, like, the group of Mets that we have right now, mostly an intensely likable group of guys. And Scooter is absolutely one of them. That said, Conforto is streaky as all hell. And the Mets cannot afford to have the amount of streaky players that they have. And, I mean, we know, too, chemistry is a component of that. Like, you know, the right guy will make guys less streaky, you know, less pressure, less pressing, yada, yada, yada. Conforto just seems, I think he's going to do well somewhere else. He's a good player. When he's hot, he's awesome. He just was not hot often enough for the Mets. So, you know, personality-wise, I'm going to be sorry to see him go, but I'd be lying if I said that I'm disappointed to not see him in the outfield. I'm excited to see who is going to be in the outfield now. Hopefully somebody with a little more consistency.
Before we move on, something that's kind of confusing to me is, and John, you're certainly not alone in this, Scott Boras.
What, how I've stuck with this team so far the whole offseason?
Yes. Boras gets a lot of hate from fans. Like, they hate him. That is a very common opinion. But I don't get the hate because, like, I love that he fucking gets players these huge contracts, and I don't care if they end up not living up to it. You know what I mean? Like, I love that Boras is able to get someone a $300 million contract or more than they may be actually valued for, because then that drives up the value of all the other players on the free agent market. So I've seen that, like, so many people that have the opinion of, like, pro player will also hate Boras, and I guess I'm confused as to why that is, when it's like he's the guy that, even though he is like a suit, so I see that aspect of it, but he is like the agent to stick it to the fucking owners.
Yeah, you make a good point there, and I kind of wish you would stop, because I don't like thinking about Boras in that kind of positive light. No, that's a great point, Em. No, as
I
far
mean, he
as
he still sucks, he's still a suit. Okay,
well, and that's right, and that I think that's like the juxtaposition there, is that on the one hand, yes, he is clearly good for the players, and as everybody knows, this is a pro player podcast. So yeah, you know, go get paid, 100%. It's just, I don't know, like, I guess the way he goes about, like, this Conforto stuff encapsulates it. You know, it's like, and I know he's just doing his job. It's what he has to do, pumping these guys up artificially. But I don't know, I guess just like in real time when it's happening, it's just such an eye roll. But you make an excellent point that, you know, at the end of the day, he's an advocate for the players. He's getting them huge contracts. That helps everyone else in the league, you know, even in terms of like the AAV for qualifying offers is way bigger because in large part of Boris's contracts. So yeah, I wish you hadn't caught me by surprise with that fact on air, because I'm trying to think of something else to rip on Boris. But that's a great point, Em.
In the defense of like the people that hate him, I think it's also part of he's like the only agent that is front facing. You know what I mean? Like, you may recognize the name of some agents, like maybe your Dan Loria's or whatever.
Right.
And I think that's not even an agent. I feel like that's a former owner of the Marlins. So I'm making my point as I say it, that you don't know any other agent. So because of his success, that puts him out there. And that does rub people the wrong way, even if it's not on some like, right. I'm Scott Boris, look at me. Just being a front-facing agent is like, he's like a used car salesman sleaze.
Right, and that's stereotype what it is, that sort slimy kind of like, almost like lawyer-esque. Apologies to any attorneys out there. But you know what I'm saying? And I mean, not for nothing, I'm not going to say it, but I can think of another forward-facing agent, but the difference is she doesn't pick her clients well, and she is not as successful. And if you can't tell who I'm talking about by that pronoun choice, I don't know what to tell you.
And I don't know if she's actually an agent. She is just Bauer's girlfriend, I think. By the time we record next week's episode, we will have, I think, all of the award winners. They announced the nominees this past week for your Rookie of the Year, Manager, Cy Young, MVP. And there were a lot of nominees that were pretty much predicted to be there by like fucking July. Not so much in the preseason on this podcast, however. Normally, when we would release these predictions or discuss them, we would wait until the winners are announced. But because we basically got every single one incorrect, we might as well just fucking go through with it now.
Now, hang on. I'm just going to put a pin in that. Don't drag me down to your level. I got more right than you did, for the record.
John is correct. He did get more right than I did in that he got two right and I got one right.
I got two more right in addition to the one that you got right. Get it straight.
What?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, we'll get there. Let's start going through it, shall we?
I like that this is now how we're surprised with our predictions. Not like, oh my God, look, we nailed it. I'm like, wait.
You got three instead of two? Yo, great fucking job. My goodness.
Now, we're not going to bore you by going through and naming all the nominees for this year's awards, because you can just fucking Google it as you're listening to this podcast. But we will bore you by going through our predictions from episode 52, just because we need to put this out there. We cannot sleep on this just because we got a shitload wrong. We have some accountability on this podcast. So, John, since you were the winner, why don't you go through your illustrious list?
All right, I think I can do that. So, starting with Manager of the Year, well, I'm going to humble myself. This was my bad call. For the National League Manager of the Year, I had Jace Tingler. Dude got fired.
Yeah, that was since fired.
Padres collapsed. It was way bad. That was a terrible call. Maybe I only deserve half credit for this because I did pick two guys. But for AL Manager of the Year, I said that it was going to be one of the old heads. It was either going to be La Russa or Baker. And Baker did get nominated. So I'm going to give myself credit for that one. And La Russa, I thought it was going to go really poorly, and it really didn't. Not until the playoffs when they were exposed, but overall, a pretty good went way better than I thought it was going to in Chicago for them.
No disrespect to Dusty, but the Astros have been really good. They've literally made the ALCS 5 years in a row. Was his job as manager really that good? I get that they face a little adversity, they're pitching, blah, 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 but like, there's no way he wins, right? Like, there's no way that he wins.
They would have needed to win the World Series again for him to win, I think.
Now, my managers, I was pretty close in that I wasn't close at all. I had Aaron Boone winning the AL Manager of the Year, and I added a few sentences after that about why I chose him, how much I believed in him and the team, and how they were going all the way. And then my, quote, dark horse pick was Luis Rojas, the manager for the Mets, who has since been not technically fired, but no longer in the managerial position, and has since been interviewed by the Yankees for bench coach positions.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Not so good.
All right, so on to Rookie of the Year. We both struck out on this one. So I did particularly poorly in this one. For my AL Rookie of the Year, I thought it would be very Metsian for it to be Jared Kelenic. dude sucked. So I guess that was oddly Metsian, but he was just terrible all year. And, you know, granted, he's a rookie, but it was real bad. Nothing close to a rookie of the year. And in the National League, I picked Sixto Sanchez, who had season-ending surgery on July 5th and did not throw a pitch the entire 2021 season.
I'm actually upset that none of my Rookie of the Years hit, if for no other reason than I don't know shit about rookie players, least of all leading into the season. So I lifted my predictions for these two from like legit predictions. I don't know if it was ESPN or CBS or whatever, but I was like, who do I pick? All right, I guess I'll just take these.
Get the receipts. Who do we blame for this?
I know. I'm going to start writing clearly. Fucking emails.
Right.
Because I picked for the AL Nick Madrigal, who at the time was on the Chicago White Sox, but I believe he was part of the Craig Kimbrell trade. So I think he ended the season with the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And for NL Rookie of the Year, I chose Ian Anderson of the Braves, who obviously won a World Series, and I'm pretty sure he did okay during the season, but
he had, I remember
like
he had
hurt, maybe?
He might have been. I know he had a couple starts against the Mets that were very good. That didn't seem like a bad pick to me, but yeah, just not at Rookie of the Year level.
Really shameful work by whoever made those predictions earlier in the year.
Embarrassing, even. For the Cy Young, Emster, we actually picked the same for both, and one worked out, one didn't. So you want to go with the one that worked out, started on a positive note?
Following along with the homer theme of my picks was Gerrit Cole, and he was actually nominated. So I'm actually pretty psyched about that. I don't know if he'll win, but he got the nomination.
Yeah, that mid-season dip after the whole foreign substances thing might be too much for him to overcome. But then, I mean, you could also play devil's advocate and say like, hey, look at how much he overcame that adversity and still had a really solid season, so... On the other side, if I may, yeah, we both went with what seemed like a very obvious choice, and somehow still seems like an obvious choice, Jacob DeGrom.
That's not a bad pick, people. That is not a bad pick.
It's not a bad pick at all. I don't want to relive that, though. You know what happened, or rather what didn't happen. But at least he's nominated for Silver Slugger, right?
What was really funny is John and I listened to the entire segment from episode 52, and as we were both talking about our Cy Young predictions, John was like,
I had the same exact selections. I got Cole and I got DeGrom. I mean, they're the two best in the game. I mean, something would have to, I think, go wrong for them to not get their Cy Youngs. And frankly, I think that's pretty cool. You know, getting both New York teams not only having that Cy Young caliber pitcher, but both of them getting it done in the same year would be extremely cool.
And both of these guys have to win unless something terrible right. happens. And we both looked at each other and laughed because something terrible happened to both of them for different reasons. So that's why the DeGrom one, not only is he elite, but also he didn't shit the bed. He just got fucking hurt.
I'll pick DeGrom again next year, quite frankly.
Yeah, seriously. Just going to pen this one in. No pencil being used. What about your MVPs?
All right. So for MVP honors, I actually had a hit and a miss on this one. My hit was Tatis Jr., who did have a good season. He was nominated. It wasn't the boldest choice, but sometimes the obvious choices work out, right? So he could very much win it. On the other side, again, in a DeGrom kind of way, I can't regret this pick at all. I picked Mike Trout, and I'm fairly confident that had he stayed healthy, he may have gotten it. But, you know, as we know, unfortunately, he got hurt. Hopefully he'll be back next year. I mean, an Angel was nominated, so I'll take that, I guess.
My nominees were, for the NL, I had Manny Machado. He wasn't nominated, but he had a pretty decent season. Nothing terrible. I still stand by that pick, and I will pick him again, so help me God.
Right.
The AL was Aaron Judge. Also not a bad pick. He had a fucking fantastic season. I think that he will probably land in the top 25 in the MVP voting, probably in like the top 5. So it wasn't horrible, but still, no dice. Just Cole. The one string that I'm holding on to is Gerrit Cole. Now, the award season is always something that is right on the heels of the regular season. It's always points of contention, conversation, and something else is always right on the heels of the regular season. And that is the Hall of Fame ballot and voting season. Some people hate it. Some people pretend to hate it, but actually love it. That's me. and the discourse has already begun. Now,
they haven't even announced the official ballot yet. Let's remember that. It is not officially the season yet.
Yeah, not quite. The official ballot comes out on November 22nd, but the guys that, I forget their names, Ryan, and I forget how to pronounce his last name, starts with a T. He and another guy, they track all of the votes.
The ones that compile them?
Yes. A lot of the voters will send them their votes so they can try to track, you know, the progress of these guys. He made a preliminary ballot sheet that basically just had everyone that's eligible for the Hall of Fame voting this year. Basically that they have been retired for 6 years and they played at least 10 seasons.
Potentially stupid question. Is there any reason why any of those players would not be on the final ballot?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that a good handful won't make it just because, you know, the sport's weird that you can like play for 10 plus years, but still just be a mid average player. So it's like, you know what? There's no point in just having them on, I guess.
Well, see, that's interesting to me because I'd be curious, what are the guidelines? Like if they're eliminating people before people are even allowed to vote on them, there must be some kind of, you know,
yeah, I'm sure bar you're right.
that they set. I'm curious what that is.
I am too, and I probably should have looked it up before we recorded, but hey, this gives us something else to talk about next week.
That's true, and I was going to say, like everything else with the Baba Wawa, it's convoluted and mysterious and bullshit at the end of the day.
And speaking of bullshit at the end of the day, so people have already started filling out this preliminary ballot. Now, I'm talking about people that don't have actual votes. They are filling out a ballot that is not the real one, and they are just posting it to Twitter, and I am already getting incensed.
And I'm already pissed.
Already incensed by the amount of people that have checked off Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and have left A-Rod off of it. I have literally responded to every single one I saw voting for Bonds, but not A-Rod. But these are to people that don't have votes, so why do I care what they vote for? But I'm still going to argue with these people, because what the fuck?
Honestly, I'm with you on this one. And you know me, I'm no A-Rod stan at all. But if you're going to vote Bonds and you're going to vote, you know, it's so obvious. Like, it's right there. I would lump Ortiz in there, too, personally.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do one and not the other. It's just logically incongruous. You know what I mean? But, I mean, mental gymnastics is the name of the game for Hall of Fame voting season. So let's go.
Someone actually made a really fucking good point from a perspective that I didn't think of. So a defense that a lot of people have of not wanting guys like A-Rod in or Cano is because they were suspended. And that seems like, okay, I guess that makes sense. But then someone just flipped it on its head recently and said, well, you would think that they would want to include the guys that actually like paid for what they did and like serve their time, as opposed to guys like Clemens or Bonds or Manny Ramirez or David Ortiz, who used PEDs but didn't fucking get suspended for even a game. They just played their careers and finished, and it's like, oh, well, they technically didn't get caught.
Manny didn't get suspended?
Oh, wait, yeah, he was actually suspended twice. John, good catch, buddy.
Yes, anytime that I catch Emily on something baseball, it's a big moment for me, I'm not gonna lie.
But that even makes even a better point. People love Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, it's true.
Guy was suspended twice for fucking PEDs.
And I guess when you dig deep into it, like, you could, depending what you're inclined towards, you could come out with either conclusion, right? Like, you know, he served his time, you know, it should be in the past, versus he had to serve time. Clearly, he's not worthy via the morality clause, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, I'm not saying one is more valid than the other, even though the first one's more valid. But, but yeah, you know, I mean, that's the name of the game this time of year.
So you all have that to look forward to. I am already getting upset and screaming into this microphone about it, and the official ballot is still 11 days or 12 days away from being released. So
I've had to turn the volume down on my computer like 3 separate times.
Matt at Dump the DH, he said that he personally is looking forward to our annual Omar Vizquel bashing episode.
Yes.
And that is definitely on the horizon, people. You are not going to want to miss that one.
Omar Vizquel is going to get more votes than somebody. And it's just going to piss you off. I see it coming.
He got over 50% last year. So he will absolutely, actually, I don't want to say absolutely.
He might get in, actually. That's a good point.
Dude, there's no way that motherfucker jumps 25%.
Don't say no way, dude. Don't I do know. It. You're tempting it.
The only reason, because I just jinxed it, and the only hope that I'm holding on to is that he's actually a scumbag of a person, and we right. all just found that out, like, in gruesome detail in the last year.
Right.
I think it was last offseason that article came out in The Athletic. So, please, baseball writers that get a vote, if you're going to be on your moral high horse about something, make it be about something that actually matters in life, like guys that have beat up their wives and girlfriends, or guys that have, you know, tried to date or have had sex with fucking teenagers like Clemens. Like, how about we exclude those guys under the fucking morality clause?
I got nothing to add to that. Preach.
So I'm already all fucking fired up and annoyed. And speaking of being fired up and annoyed, a former Met coach was in the news recently. And John, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you, Em. So you know what was funny? It was last week when it was just the little detail about the raccoon thing, right? It was like, you know, Lindor strangling McNeil, whatever. And then it was like,
strangle.
Right. It was like, oh, yes, ex-Scott spilling the beans. No. We spoke too soon. Chili Davis, aptly named, chili, beans, there's something there, is spilling the beans. Dude. He had, and you know, it's funny because, you know, the same thing. I was like, you know, it's an article in the Post, so take it with a grain of salt. This was another article in the Post, so, you know, requisite grain of salt. But this dude had a lot to say. Some of it I liked, some of it I didn't like. Some of the more interesting things he had to say, because I don't want to make this just about ripping on Chili. We'll get there. But the way that he was talking about analytics being applied within the Mets seemed really consistent. And I say this, you know, outside observer, no inside track or anything like that, but made a lot of sense. You know, if you're factoring some of the seemingly baffling moves that Rojas made during the season, and Chili was pretty straight up in saying that, yeah, he was handed game plans that he was not allowed to vary from. And he made a good point, which is that, you know, he views analytics as information, which is what it is. And, you know, he made the point that you need to combine that with the human element, which is true. And he was ripping on Zach Scott, dude, saying he's just an analytics guy. He doesn't belong in baseball. He should be in the analytics department. Bah, 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 bah. Now, the other side of that is, you know, he's going on about, like, you know, if they had let me stay, I could have turned it around. It was like, well, how much more of his, like, it was pretty dismal when Chili Davis got let go. So, I mean, I'm torn on who to believe here. I mean, I'm sure, as with everything, the truth is somewhere in the middle. It's somewhere in that gray area. There's probably a little bit of truth to both sides. But there's something to be said for Chili Davis would not be saying this if he was looking to get another job, like, immediately. You know what I mean? So there seems to be a little bit of finality to this statement, at least in the short term, as far as Chili Davis's job prospects are concerned. So yeah, he went scorched earth, and what were your thoughts on it as a non-Mets fan? Because for me, it was a lot of regurgitation, a lot of stuff I've heard before, a lot of like, well, yeah, I've heard this side, I don't know who to believe. Chili clearly has an axe to grind, so in addition to it being a New York Post article, you got to take it with an additional grain of salt. Chili's already high in sodium, so, you know.
To be honest, I think that there is probably a lot of truth to it, like you said. And that's why he got fired and why it wouldn't work, is that the organization and Chili Davis are clearly on two different pages as far as what their game plan is and how they are trying to achieve it. So everyone has to buy in to the mission. Everyone right. has to buy in to the process. You can't have, this is our process, and then one or two coaches being like, fuck that process, I'm doing this, because just doesn't work out that way in a sport of repetition like this. So I think that Chili's probably right and probably speaking truth. And he's actually, without realizing it, just telling us all why of the details of right, why yeah. he was fired and why the Mets were probably right to fire him.
It's true. The other interesting part of that interview was he didn't name him. That's important to note. But he seemingly went after Francisco Lindor. Just the way that he phrased, like, you know, it being about a new player and something along, you know, is this guy a team player? Bah, bah, bah. That part to me really seemed like, okay, Chili's mad that he wasn't able to keep a job with Francisco Lindor on the team. I get that. So that, like, you know, when the analytic points, it's like, okay, you may have a point there, Chili, on some of it. And again, as you pointed out, Em, it's also why you don't have the job anymore. But then once you get into just flinging shit like that, it's like, all right, that to me removes a little bit of credibility. Because that's really the worst we've heard about Lindor. Like, everything else I've heard seems like he's a good teammate. People seem to like him. So that to me seemed a little out of nowhere. Like, oh, Lindor's an asshole? That's news.
I feel like it's on some... when was the last time, I guess you can kind of count Cespedes, but when was the last time the Mets had, like, a big free agent signing or trade to bring someone like Francisco Lindor in?
Cespedes was the guy before him, for sure.
Right? Yeah. So, like, Chili Davis probably liked the dynamic of he had a lot of guys that were young or unproven and for one reason or another, so they would maybe defer to him a little bit more and look at him more as a authority figure. Whereas,
elder statesman kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Francisco Lindor is coming there on some, not uncoachable, I'm sure, just on some, like, you're not my high school coach where
you're
there's like that
dad.
Power. Exactly. You're not God or my boss. What was that guy? The fucking Bagel Boss guy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're not my father or God or my boss.
Shut your mouth. You're not God or my father or my boss.
So I feel like it's probably on some shit like that, that Chili didn't like that. And like you said, it was just another thing front offices to make sure they don't hire Chili, because he's basically saying he, like, can't work with a fucking big star player.
Essentially, yeah. It was a lot of unintentional self-incrimination from Chili. As much as he thought he was just, you know, throwing dirt, it was a little bit like, Chili, you're kind of burying yourself under this dirt that you're throwing.
And not to, like, laugh at the man's name, but the first name Chili is ridiculous to me. And saying it over and over again in when we talk about it, I am trying to, like, stifle laughter every time we're like, Chili really needs to get his shit together.
That's great. So just to wrap things up on the Mets quick, the new name that has emerged in the midst of this front office search is Adam Cromie, who, interestingly, is not currently in the game. He was an assistant GM for the Nationals, I think last in 2017. So he helped build the team that eventually won the World Series, but he wasn't there for it. You know, he left a year or two prior. I'm personally, tinfoil hat time, I'm of the opinion, and this is not an original thought, but I agree with those saying that the Mets may be holding out for David Stern's contract with the Brewers to be up next year. Cromie being, you know, not in the game right now. I'm just saying, if Steve Cohen's like, hey, 1 year, buttload of money, what do you say, Adam? You know what I mean? I don't see that being the most outlandish thing in the world. But what was a little bit outlandish, on a serious note, former Mets reliever Pedro Feliciano passed away a couple days ago in his sleep. He was only 45. He had apparently gone jet skiing with his family earlier that day. Just really tragic and unexpected. Feliciano was a great Met, man. He was one of the all-time great lefty specialists that the Mets had. He led the league in relief appearances, or I think just appearances in general, over the course of two seasons, I believe it was. Dude was just a workhorse. Always seemed like a fun guy in interviews and stuff. And so that was just really disheartening to hear. Really, really tragic. And just so young. So sad.
He was actually the last pitcher in Major League Baseball to have made 90 appearances.
Wow.
Pitched in 90 games. He did that, I think it was in a few years ago. I think maybe the year or two before he retired.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, you know, RIP Pedro Feliciano, man. That's a tough one.
This past week, Justin Verlander, he had a showcase and a bunch of teams went, saw him, including the Rangers. I think the Tigers were there. The Yankees were actually there. And interesting enough, now, John, let me take that tinfoil hat from you and put it on my head.
Hang on, let me run into your room quick.
He had this showcase. Foley artist.
Yeah, yeah.
Verlander had his showcase at Eric Cressy's facility. Now, for those of you following along, Eric Cressy is the current strength and conditioning coach for the New York Yankees. So I try not to get in the rumor mill in that I make up my own rumors, but short of knowing if Cressy is like that guy, I don't know if he's the guy that like when pitchers are rehabbing, he's someone that they go and do strength and conditioning with when they're getting close to their return. Because if he's not that guy, then that is a little interesting for him to have chosen Cressy of all strength and conditioning coaches to be working with in some capacity.
I mean, Verlander, along with Correa and I can't think of the other guy offhand, he's the one that I keep seeing in all those mock-ups of him in Yankee uniforms. So to me, it's like almost a reality. I believe it.
And I feel like the thing that solidifies it is the fact that I fucking hate Justin Verlander. So much like Rugi Odor, who I also hated, and the Yankees brought him in last year and they forced me to like him, I feel like that is on the horizon for me. I'm going to have to like Justin Verlander because he's going to be fucking pitching for my team.
It's going to be a tough season. Now, if I could complete non-sequitur, well, not complete non-sequitur, but my favorite little strength and conditioning coach anecdote. This is the only football thing I'll say this week. Cue the music, I guess. So I recently found out, so the LA Rams, their head coach, Sean McVay, he's really animated, right? Like he's running up and down the sideline and stuff. Apparently, since the strength and conditioning coach doesn't really have much to do on game day, his entire job is to shadow Sean McVay up and down the field and physically pull him out of the way when he's about to hit into a ref. Because if you're too far out on the field as a coach, it's a 15-yard penalty. And it's just this compilation video of him just like, he's so ready, man. Like he's there. Grabs Sean McVay by the waist, pulls him back. It was so fucking funny.
Before we get into the voicemails, I had the absolute pleasure of being on the Triple Play Fantasy Show with the guys over at Triple Play Fantasy. It was a around the horn style setup. If anyone listening has watched ESPN's Around the Horn with Tony Reale as the moderator, it was like that. And we went through the AL East. I covered the Yankees and then the other guys, they covered the rest of the teams. It was a fucking great conversation. It's on my Twitter page. It's on the Breaking Balls Twitter page. I highly, highly recommend it, especially because we closed it out with a little trivia game. It was an Alex Rodriguez trivia. And I'm not going to tell you guys who won. You just have to go listen to the show. And now let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Danny B.
Oh, hello, it's Danny B here from Manchester, England. I just wanted to say congratulations to Ashland and all the Braves fans on their World Series victory. But most of all, I would like to congratulate myself on winning the postseason classic. I never had any doubt. For those of us gifted with the sight, it is a curse, not a blessing. I've actually seen my own death. Hashtag aged 83, trying to remove a bra with my teeth. Though at 83, it's probably my own. Anyway, go Braves! Woo!
Danny, once again, congratulations. And now that I've gotten that out of the way, if you truly have the sight, for the love of God, when you hear our predictions for 2022 next March, if they are as off as they were this year, can you at least give us some sort of heads up, please?
Danny, I gotta say, man, I'm relieved that you called in. I honestly thought that we weren't gonna hear from you. I'm glad to hear a little braggadocious attitude, because I was honestly afraid that the whole British, you know, politeness and deference was gonna take over and wouldn't hear from you. So that was awesome. Congratulations, man. You earned it.
Danny, thank you so much for participating in our postseason classic, and thank you for your call. Our next call is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. I got a couple things. First of all, everyone's saying like, oh, nobody wants to be the Mets GM, lol, Mets. They're asking a bunch of people to like move across the country. Like some of them are happy where they are, even if it's like a lesser role. So I don't think it's about like not wanting to be the GM. I don't think no one wants to be the GM. I mean, I'd be the GM. I'd do a terrible job and I have no qualifications, but I mean, I'd do it. But yeah, that's not happening because I'd do a terrible job and have no qualifications. And also, second thing, how is a guy who looks like Buzz from Home Alone, like one of the best and also one of the most likable players in baseball? Doesn't make sense. That's all I got.
You know, sometimes in this crazy, crazy world we live in, you'll find a beacon of sanity and rational thinking. And I never thought it would come from a Cardinals fan, but here we are. Quinn, that was an excellent point, man. They're going to figure it out. And it's an easy, you know, don't want to go too far down this road, but you know how it goes, man. It's too easy to dunk on the Mets when really, you know, somebody on Twitter, I forget who, made the point of it's like, you know, okay, so the Mets might be closing in on someone, you know, after a 2 month plus search, whatever. It's like, well, how many other times do you think it's taken multiple months to find a front office member? Hint, a bunch of times. And it has never been scrutinized in the media like this. So it's convenient to to leave out those details. Like, hey, people are settled in good jobs. You know, their families live there. Like, they have contracts. They, you know, some people aren't allowed to talk to the Mets. And even as Sandy said, you know, I mean, the same way that Boris says to, you know, talk up his side, so does Sandy. So, again, grain of salt. But, you know, Sandy's saying, like, the Mets, admittedly, it's not a job for someone who's looking for an easy gig. It's going to be a challenge. But that's not a bad thing. If that's what you're looking for, that's the kind of attitude that we need and that we want. So, yeah, man, I appreciate that little dose of sanity. Thank you for that.
It is tough to ask an executive who has been in a position for a long time and has a family somewhere to uproot their life and take a job where they could be fired in the middle of the season because yes. There's so much upheaval happening exactly. in the Mets organization. So that's an aspect that a lot of people don't think of either, that like someone like Billy Bean, for example, couldn't possibly have more job security next to he probably has the most job security as a GM next to fucking Brian Cashman, who's had his job for 25 years.
Yep.
So why the fuck would he leave there to come to New York and potentially just get lambasted in the press and then unceremoniously fired?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, people have short memories. Like, the whole tone was set when everyone was freaking out about Theo Epstein not coming here. There was no universe in which Theo was going to come here. He wants to own a team. And so as soon as all the fake outrage, like, oh, you guys had Theo on the hook and you lost. Okay, it was all fucking downhill from there, dialogue-wise, as far as I'm concerned.
And Buzz's girlfriend, woof.
Buzz, your girlfriend, woof.
Woof. That's so funny because his wife is, like, very attractive. So I go, woof.
Quinn, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from James.
Hey, Emily, John, my two favorite people. It's your boy, James, you know. Here's two quick questions. Number one, are we even going to have a season? I know I asked you this, guys, before, but from what the reports are, the owners and players hate each other. And number two, and this is for you, John, who's run the Mets? You want me to run the Mets? I'll run the Mets for you. I got you, fam.
James, my man, there's only one way to settle this, because Quinn threw his hat into the ring right before you, so we're going to need some kind of battle royale, fight to the death, something, you know, maybe like Gamesters or Triskelion style. DJ Bingington, if you could get that Star Trek fight music, I will be forever in your debt, more so than I already am for everything that you've done.
Oakley dokley.
No, I want to see James and Quinn duke it out for the position of Mets GM, and then I will proceed to not give it to either of them because I would like to win next year.
And we can get Scott Boras to come do the weigh-in fucking shit-talking. We have the king of queens in this corner. James, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Block.
Good afternoon. This is Block. I wanted to see how the gang felt about Credit Girl when discussing this season that just ended, using the phrase mission accomplished. Can't imagine as a Red Sox fan if I lost the season series to the Yankees and then got my team's ass sent packing to Boston for the season by the Yankees again, that I would describe the season as mission accomplished. But I'd love to hear your guys' take. As always, huge fan.
Block, first of all, fake news part one of your voicemail. Credit Girl, aka Brian Cashman, his comments about mission accomplished were in context of resetting the luxury tax penalties that they had accrued from seasons past because they came in under the luxury tax this year. And I can understand why you would not want your GM to hear that, because you know what? I feel the same way about hearing my GM try to feed me and the other fans some line of bullshit that it's a rebuilding year when they have a top five payroll. So listen, we both eat shit from our GMs, okay? Let's just put that out there.
First off, I now am unable to not picture Brian Cashman flying in a fighter jet onto an aircraft carrier with the mission accomplished banner. But I mean,
ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Yeah, we got him. Yeah, but like coming back to, yes, you're right. Context is important, but even with the proper context, that's such like a company man, corporate brag. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, well, look, you know, financially we did really well this quarter. It's like, and you lost in the wild card game. So yeah, congratulations. Great job.
Lost the wild card game, won the capital gains. So. Right. Yeah. Block, thank you so much for your misinformed call, as always. Our last call is from Will.
Hey, guys, this is Will. This is Emily's favorite Braves fan, slash Chaney AEG on Twitter. I just wanted to kind of drop a line here. All this talk of, you know, the Braves signing Freeman or the Yankees throwing $300 million at Correa, I think we're kind of missing the bigger picture here. With the CBA talks coming up, you know, this has kind of been coming to a head ever since Manfred took over. And we know the union and the commissioner's office have basically the same relationship that Emily and Jason Veritek's wife does. So I think that'll be a big hurdle we have to look at before we can even talk about baseball in 2022. Anyway, big fan, first time caller. Keep up the good work. Thanks, guys.
Will, I'm so psyched that you called in, and even though I know that you are from Georgia, like born and raised, I was still somehow shocked to hear your heavy Southern accent for some reason.
Well, that's funny because like I'm not familiar with Will yet, and so my immediate reaction was like, oh, it's a Braves fan.
Will, I know from back on the Facebook days when we were baseball writers for Last Word on Sports, so he is an OG online friend of mine. And first of all, congratulations on the World Series win. And second of all, that was a fucking fantastic analogy about the players and the owners and me and Catherine Veritek. And the reason why I have hope is because Catherine Veritek has since unblocked me. She went into her blocked list and made the decision to unblock me for some reason. So
she is bored.
If we can have this moment, Catherine and I, then maybe the owners and the players can have some sort of compromise here. Even though I didn't compromise anything, she's just letting me back into her feed. So anything's possible.
Yeah, Will nailed it with that one, man. Sick reference, bro. Everybody knows you have the best references.
Sick reference, though, bro.
Oh, thanks, bud.
Dude, your references are out of control. Everyone knows that.
Will, thank you so much for your call, and thank you to all of our callers. You guys are amazing. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy? Give the Breaking Balls hotline a call, 631-820-7377. This past weekend, they announced the winners for Rawlings Gold Glove Awards, and we're not going to sit here and go through all the winners. You can look those up yourself. But as much as I shit on the awards, I found myself actually watching the award show on ESPN and, dare I say, enjoying it. Now, because we're all starved for baseball content, the vast majority of MLB Twitter was watching this award show as well.
The bar is admittedly low, but
very low.
Right.
So we were all talking about it, watching along, and at Mike Mitch NH on Twitter, he made the comment that he would actually love to watch a red carpet style award show, that instead of having them all separate on different nights as they do currently, to have like an Oscars type show, but for all of these baseball awards.
Now, my first thought is that it wouldn't work because a big part of the Oscars, as you know, is the red carpet show. It's almost as big as the ceremony itself. And that's all these beautiful people walking down the red carpet. There are some uggos in Major League Baseball, and it would just not. And also, I think the interest level would not be like, oh, Leah, let's watch Freddie Freeman's family walk down the red carpet. Like, eh, and get to the awards.
They're like, I'm wearing my dad's suit from his wedding. But this got the wheels turning in our head. And admittedly, I would watch the shit out of something like this. But we have to have more than just the current awards. It would have to be a stretched out 3-hour show. And obviously, the main awards are the big ones. The best picture is like your World Series winners, MVPs, yada, yada. But just like the Oscars, there has to be some minor technical awards. So this week's top six is the top six minor technical awards for the MLB Red Carpet Show. John, you want to kick this off?
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a best cinematography, right? All right, so number six, the best mid-season makeover. Now, what's interesting about this award is it's up for interpretation. There's two directions you can go with it. On the one hand, you know, some players, like, halfway through the season, they'll get, like, a radical haircut or come out with some, like, crazy facial hair or something. That could count. Or you could take it even less literally and just, you know, like a trade deadline acquisition. You know, change of scenery, new team, new play. And he just fucking kills it. It's mid-season makeover.
The number five minor technical award is the best play made by a fan in the stands. All season, we're watching people literally dive and push children out of the way for foul balls and home runs. And there have been some unreal catches by fans. So it's time to recognize these people.
I agree. Now, the number four top technical baseball award, I'm going to go with best mascot performance. Now, this isn't to be confused with best mascot, which wouldn't be fair because Mr. Met would run away with it every year. It's just it's not right. No, this is best mascot performance, which I would say I don't know if Mr. Met would win this because you got some guys like the Philly. They're all in my goddamn division, too, like the Philly Fanatic and Blooper. They get creative, man. Like, I've seen Blooper with an easel and a palette going at it, painting. Philly Fanatic goes around like harassing other players and managers and stuff. Like, that's fun shit, man. And I would love to see highlight reels. I would love to get that narrowed down to the best performance by a mascot.
My favorite performance this year by a mascot, by the way, was actually the Philly Fanatic, because one of my favorite gifs that I have is of Giancarlo Stanton with like a stink face on. His eyebrows are furrowed and he's looking from the away dugout. He's in his gray uniform out at the field, and what he was looking at was the Philly Fanatic fucking smashing a Yankees helmet with like the thing that they used to pound
that.
The dirt down, and
that.
He was fucking unhappy about it. Like, he looked like he was about to tackle that fucking thing.
That's good stuff though, man. That's funny.
The number three top minor technical award, best landscaping. These grounds crews are fucking magicians. They are able to make these perfect lines. I mean, the Braves had Hank Aaron's number 44 mowed into the outfield somehow. It's like, I like don't even know how this fucking works or how it's possible.
My favorite is when they incorporate architectural features from the city, like St. Louis. They'll have the arch, or they'll have, like, you know, a city skyline mowed into the grass. It's insane. How do you do something on that scale? Right? Like, when you're in the stands, like, oh, that looks great. When you're down on the field, like, it's really impressive.
I can't even make uniform fucking bubble letters, like, if right. I'm to write my name down on a piece of paper right here. So I'm amazed by them.
All right. So the number two top technical baseball award. Now, you guys remember from the Oscars, there used to be a category called Best Foreign Language Film. They've since renamed it to, I think it's Best International Feature or something like that. So we're going to kick it old school here, and maybe mildly inappropriate. I want to see voted on the best foreign language player. Now, this is a really wide, I guess it would mostly be Spanish-speaking players, but there's a bunch of different ones throughout the league. And, you know, I think it's just a really stupid, funny way to look at things. Completely pointless, completely meaningless, borderline racist, but not.
It would be really interesting because, like, the guys that speak multiple languages, would there be, like, a hard line? Like, it's the language that you learn growing up. Or is it like, hey, this guy five languages.
That's a great point. And we would need to figure out some kind of way to differentiate. And I would say it's, what language do you do your post-game pressers in?
That's a good one. Now, the number one top minor technical award is the best position player pitching performance. This is something that gets laughed at and somewhat overlooked because it's always happening in fucking jokes of a game. But hey, there's got to be the best position player as a pitcher. And why not recognize it with an award that has four-word alliteration?
Well, yeah, I might get this wrong. Didn't Rizzo, like, strike out Freeman?
Oh, yeah,
right, those are the guys, right? Yeah. So, I mean, hey, there's something there.
That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are awesome. And of course, our callers. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun? Feeling brassy? Give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well. At DJ, B-I-N-G, I-N-G, T-O-N. And we will catch you guys next week.